Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today. VJ Pandian is back with us. He's the horticulture agent and educator for UW Extension in Kenosha, Milwaukee, and Racine counties. We'll talk with VJ about growing berries in your garden. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. You may have berry questions, you may have other garden questions, and I hope you'll join us. The number is 800-642-1234. Or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. VJ Pandian, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Good morning, Larry. Good to see you. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I tell you what, we think about berries here. We actually have quite a few berries that grow well in Wisconsin, don't we?
Absolutely. And out of all the berries that we grow in Wisconsin, still the blueberry is one of the most popular one. And then, raspberries is also another popular one. And so there are a lot of new types of berries also available these days, like from honeyberries is still getting a little more popularity these days. And then we also have the traditional currants and gooseberries as well, too. The blackberries are still not hardy for Wisconsin. They are testing some new varieties, but some of the primal canes, the vegetative canes, can produce some fruits even in the first growing season. And there are some couple of varieties, that seems to be promising in Wisconsin. So, yes, we have quite a bit collections of berries that we can grow in our backyard.
And that is and a great collection. Would you count strawberries in that group, or is
absolutely
that a different kind?
Yeah. Now you can. Yeah. Absolutely. I got to say that. Yeah, you can count strawberries into it, and you can also count some aronias also into it too. And then we also have the Joestar berries. A lot of new novelty type of berries also in the market. Then we have the lingonberries also getting popular as well too. Yes.
Yeah, I like it, lingonberries. Let's think about disease for a minute. Are some berries more susceptible to disease and insects than others?
It depends upon what type of berries we are talking about it. And absolutely, with the spotted wing Drosophila, is very rampacious in Wisconsin. Yes, they tend to decimate many of the berries, especially if you're talking about like raspberries and blackberries. It's one of their favorites for them, actually. So, and in terms of the diseases wise, there are certain berries. If you don't provide a good site conditions, they become vulnerable to diseases from, phytophthora root rot diseases or some verticillium wilt or any cane diseases, they do. So again, the key thing is that you need to have a good site location, good pruning, good amount of light. These are some of the essential characteristics that is needed to grow berries in Wisconsin. Plus, also matters a lot.
Well, blueberries are kind of a favorite of mine. They go in my pancakes when I make them for daughter Emily. I throw a handful of blueberries in. If I have cereal, I like blueberries a lot. And I know you've done a lot of work with blueberries. But there are some issues with growing them in parts of the state, I think.
Yeah, blueberries are still the favorites for many Americans, and there's no doubt about it. It is a very healthy fruit, and it is rich in antioxidant characteristics, so yes. And, now I think we can grow blueberries in our backyard, even if your soil condition is not conducive enough, because blueberries need a soil pH of 4.5 to 5.5 pH. And unfortunately, in many parts of the Wisconsin, we don't have that kind of acidic soil. And so one of the way to grow them in your backyard, even if you don't have an acidic soil, is to dig a trench. So dig a trench about 12 inches deep and about four feet wide, and scoop up the original soil and then lay a landscape fabric and then put up a soilless media in it. A soilless media comprising of like a pine bark mixed with some peat and perlite would be an excellent media to sustain your acidic soil pH. Now, if you don't have a pine bark, you can use pine needles as well too. But don't use any other materials like compost or oak leaves or anything like that, as part of the soilless media. And then toss in some sulfur. Sulfur is a slow-releasing acid fertilizer, and it breaks down. It takes about 3 to 6 months to break down. And then that will help in acidifying the media. And during the growing season, beginning in like from May till about mid-July, every 2-3 weeks, use some sort of like acid fertilizer. Common acid fertilizers that's used for azaleas and rhododendrons can be used to drench around your blueberry plant. So, yes, blueberries can be successfully grown in your own backyard by using this type of soilless media in a trench system. You can also, grow them in container as well, too. But the drawback in container is that every 4 years, you need to get a bigger container and to accommodate the roots of the blueberries. If not, they can get highly root-bound, and you're going to see a sharp reduction in its fruit production.
Mark in Green Bay has a berry question for us. Let's go there. Hi, Mark. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. Thanks for this program. I love berries. I love raspberries. I love them all. But mostly I've recently been finding in July in northern Door County thimbleberries, and also up at the pancake place at Sister Bay, lingonberries. Is there any way to grow thimbleberries or lingonberries in Wisconsin?
And you're in Green Bay area.
Yes, I'm in Green Bay.
Okay.
I haven't personally grown thimbleberries, but lingonberries, yes, you can grow them. There are some few varieties which are hardy, and you can get it in some online garden catalogs, some lingonberries. And they need acid soil. It's just like growing the blueberries in a trench system, where you use a soilless media, you can use lingonberries plants to grow them as well, too. So, yes, you can grow them. Thimbleberries, I haven't even tried it yet, so I don't know much about it yet.
Okay, there you go, Mark. Thank you for calling. Stephen in Waterford, your turn. Hi, Stephen.
Hi. Say, I was just wondering, I'm getting ready to plant some ever-bearing raspberries again. This will be my third time because I have a few walnut trees in my growing area. And I wondered, how far away do you have to be from a walnut tree to allow them to grow?
As far as away from it, minimum, I would say 50 feet away from it, you can. The roots tends to produce a toxicity called jugulone toxicity, and that will inhibit any of the plant materials. So that toxicity is actually highly immobile in the soil, which means it strongly abides to the soil, so it doesn't get leached out that easily, and it doesn't break out that easily either. It can last for a long time. The general recommendation they say is that 50 feet away from the tree would be best, to grow down.
Yeah, you definitely want to get beyond the crown.
Yeah,
do you
absolutely.
Not? Yeah, definitely.
And the other thing also is that, rake up any of the fallen leaves or any fruits, because they also tend to have the jugulone compound into it. So you don't want those, to contaminate your media, your soil while you're growing the raspberries as well, too. As far as away from the tree would be the best option to grow.
And raspberries, I don't see them grown in pots very often, or I guess I've never seen raspberries in pots, but they probably are grown in pots, BJ.
Yeah, that is a raspberry variety called Raspberry Shortcake, which is a container-based raspberries. It's a really compact dwarf type. I have seen them growing in containers, but you need to overwinter them, by burying the containers in the in the ground in late fall. Or you bring it in a cold basement. That's another option. I've seen it in Chicago Botanical Garden, but they have been growing actually the raspberry shortcakes as a hedgerow near to the educational center. So it was just really amazing to see how compact and dwarf and bushy looking these berries are. Yeah,
very cool. Kristen in Houghton, Michigan. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have successfully transplanted a couple of thimbleberry plants into my backyard. They had been left dug up by construction, so I didn't go out in the woods and grab them. But from what I can tell, they like more of a shady area, and they definitely like growing around trees and wooded areas.
Yes.
But I don't know how long it takes them to flower.
They are preferably, in woodland species. And but I haven't personally tried growing it, so I don't know much about it yet.
But that's good information. Kristen, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Jerry and Spooner will give you a chance. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, thanks. If I may change the subject briefly, I have a troubleshooting question regarding broccoli. I have a trouble finding a balance between planting early and it getting warm too fast. Last year, it shot up to 85. The plants quit growing. I have the fundamentals of broccoli. I've been doing it for 30 years. But do you have any tricks or ideas? I can use a coal frame, or I could make shade if it gets too hot. What do you think?
Well, the spring is highly unpredictable these days. And you all know broccoli is a cold-tolerant crop. So the first thing I tend to do is to measure the soil temperature before you transplant your broccoli. If your soil temperature gets to a 45 degrees, that is ideal. I think that is a minimum, I would say, for transplanting broccoli. But if the temperature spikes up, especially when the head has been formed, then they will actually burst into flowers, and it ruins the quality of it. And unfortunately, at that time, not much can be done. But if you do have any kind of like a shade cloth, which is about 10% or 20% shade, creates a shade, that would be helpful, because what happens is that the heat and the light is a triggering factor that actually ruins the quality of the head. The head becomes very loose after that. So the other option is to always best to choose some early maturing varieties, which matures about like 45 days, rather than going about 55 days or something like that, And that would be another option, before, the early summer starts, they will actually form the heads and you can harvest them right away. So the key thing is that you don't want the temperature spikes up to 80, 85 degrees. That is the worst thing to do, for the broccoli, So transplant them in the springtime as soon as the soil temperature reaches 45 degrees, and then try to choose the early maturing varieties. That would be another good option. But the worst case scenarios, if you do plant them later in the season, then maybe preferably use some sort of like a shade cloth.
Yeah, could you throw a little water on them too, sprinkle them with water, have some shade there and a little breeze? Will that cool the plants off or not?
Certainly, you can, sprinkle some water. It'll give you some temporary solution, but if you do happen to have it late in the spring, if you transplanted it by mid-July, we can't do much. How much water you put down to it?
Oh, man.
Unless you have a yard condition near to it, but try to transplant them early in the spring. Yeah.
Yeah. Vijay Pandian, our guest today, horticulture extension educator for Kenosha, Milwaukee, and Racine counties. I'm Larry Mueller. Tyler Dinner, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Vijay Pandian, our horticulture educator for extension in Kenosha, Milwaukee, and Racine counties. Zeroing in a little on growing berries in the state, but we can take other questions as well. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. And Sandra in Mount Pleasant has perhaps an unpleasant question to ask from Mount Pleasant. Hi, Sandra.
Yeah, it's Racine County, so I was wondering, two things. We have raspberries in our garden, in our vegetable garden. So for the last couple of years, we've had the spotted Drosophila fly.
Yeah.
So I tried cleaning them out really well this year now. And I don't know, maybe we'll just have to get rid of the whole thing to get rid of them and start over sometime. And so if there's any thoughts on that. And second, is there a way to keep them from, to stop them from expanding into the garden? Can I keep them in a in their own area somehow?
Well, that's a good question. The first thing is that, you know, probably by, you know, in the summertime, you need to start monitoring for this one. So you set up a trap, you know, some sort of like a yeast or cider-based trap, you know, you in a small cup, pour those things and hang them. And every day morning, you know, start to check it out. And if you're able to catch one or two of them, then immediately you can start applying some sort of organic insecticides in your patch. And that will help in controlling it, you know. So it is very key to monitor the biological, you know, life cycle of this spotted wing drosophila in your garden first. And that is the only way you can successfully be able to control it, you know. Now, there are some other short residual type of organic insecticides available, like Pygamic, which is a pyrethrin-based. But it breaks down, you know, within a half a day, I would say, in a nice sunny day. Say, when you're harvesting the fruits and you started to see quite a bit of this spotted wing drosophila, you can spray it in the morning, and then afternoon you can go back and harvest those fruits. Or perhaps you can harvest the fruits when they are actually, you know, not fully in mature or fully ripened, but, you know, more in a mature stage, you can harvest them, and then you can freeze them as well. Now, to prevent it spread to another garden and stuff like that, unfortunately, not much you can do. I mean, you're already doing some good sanitation in the fall. But again, you know, it's all over in Wisconsin at this time. So not much can be done to prevent it, but keep monitoring it and set some traps. And the trap is a good indicator that will tell you when to apply some sort of organic insecticide to knock them out.
Mm-hmm. There you go, Sandra. Thank you for calling. Sue emailed. She's looking for a place to pick organic berries in north central Wisconsin. You may not have an exact figure. Is there a place she can go to kind of find out where these spots are located?
So I think probably you can go to Wisconsin Berry Growers Association website, and you can be able to find the list of, you know, berry growers in Wisconsin, and then you can find out, you know, which particular location you're looking for are the growers, and you can talk to them whether they are actually going in organic or probably, you know, more of a conventional or a combination of both. So you check out the Wisconsin Berry Growers Association.
Ah, very good tip. Larry in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Larry.
Good morning. I have a black ice plum, and the cross-pollinator toca died. I have a Stanley plum next to the black ice. Would that pollinate the black ice plum?
The black ice plum, in any type of like a hybrid plums, they do require actually, you know, pollination, that's cross-pollination. Definitely, you know, it will help in pollination. Make sure that they're blooming at the same time, you know, that will be one of the key characteristics to look for it. If it doesn't actually, within a year or so, then you will know by now, you know, whether it blooms at the same time or not. But certainly you can use the European, you know, the Stanley plum for pollinating the black ice. Yes, you can use that.
All right. There you go, Larry. Thank you. Linda in Winona, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Well, for Easter, I got two tulip in pots and a hyacinth plant. And, of course, now they're kind of spent. But I've had different thoughts. Can I plant those bulbs now as soon as our few snowflakes have stopped? Or do I have to wait till fall?
So you could definitely plant them. So right now, you know, after they're done with the flowering, you still see have them green leaves. The green leaves help in, you know, storing some energy for next year. So you don't actually want to prune them off. So let the green leaves go ahead and, you know, do its photosynthetic process to store the energy in the bulb back again. And if you do have another bigger container, or if you want to plant them in the ground, you don't disturb the soil too much, scoop it out from the container and plant them in the ground or repot it in a different container and provide some little bit of nutrients, you know, either fast-releasing or slow-releasing type of nutrients. And once the leaf naturally dries out, let it dry out. In that way, you could be able to successfully let them grow, keep on growing for the next few years, yeah.
All right. There you go, Linda. Thank you so much. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Give a call with your question or comment. Listener emailed that her blueberries are growing well, too well. And when should she prune them?
Well, the blueberries, you know, they produce their flowering buds in second, third, and fourth canes quite a bit. After the fourth cane, the fifth canes are very stouty, and they don't have that much of flower buds. So you could remove the fifth year cane completely down to the ground. The rest of the canes, the first, second, third, and fourth year cane, you don't have to touch it. Unless if it has a broken cane or a spindly cane or any tip dieback, those portions could be pruned off. Other than that, you don't have to do that much of pruning in blueberries, okay? unlike raspberries and other things that you have to do a lot of pruning, but blueberries in terms of pruning, only after 4 years later do you have to do that.
Gary in Iron River emailed, he has a relatively large bed inside a deer fence that is planted with crocus, daffodils, and some large allium. He's thinking about planting some raspberries in that bed and plant the type that's cut down completely at the end of each year. And he's wondering if there's any reason why this wouldn't be doable.
Certainly you could actually plant them. The only thing is that, you know, your raspberries will overtake the bed, you know, because, you know, you're planting a fall bearing raspberries and then they will start to get enlarged and wider and wider. And eventually they will choke out some of the other bulbs. So definitely you could plant them, you know, you could plant the fall-bearing raspberries in it.
All right, there we go. And Mike in Fond du Lac, we go to you. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I have a very old pear tree in my backyard, and 4 or 5 years ago I grafted some twigs to some grafting stock, and I had 5 take, and I would like to purchase some more grafting stock. Do you know where I can purchase grafting stock to do this?
All right.
That's a good question. A lot of times many consumers ask about, you know, where can I buy the rootstock and the scions and all those things. So UW Extension has a wonderful publication, which you can get it downloaded from online for free. It is called Home Fruit Cultivars for Southern Wisconsin. And you can download this publication from our Learning Store website. And in that publication, if you go to the last page, we have a list of some reputable commercial nursery growers all around the United States. And you can contact one of those nursery growers and ask them, you know, if you've been able to get the rootstock for the pad. And so I know it's too late to place those orders, you know, probably by next year you can ask them, you know, about that.
Okay, so the UW Learning Store website, and what's the title of that publication again?
Home Fruit Cultivars for Southern Wisconsin. And the publication number is A for Apple, 2582.
A2582. There you go, Mike. Yeah. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Philip in Jackson, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Philip.
Hi, good morning. My comment was that the lady previously had this problems with the spotted wing Drosophila.
Yes.
And I found that they really like to just to stay in that detritus on the ground, and then they come up and lay their eggs on the berries. So anytime I find a storm coming out of the west or southwest where they'd be coming up in that storm, I can just spray the ground and not really sprayed the berries themselves. And I don't really have as much problem then with them.
That's great. VJ, what do you think?
I never heard about it, but, you know, these flies originally, when they invaded Wisconsin, yes, you know, the storm actually, you know, stripped them. And that's one possibility that how it got. But now the spotted wing Drosophila has naturalized in Wisconsin. So we've seen starting to see, you know, every year. Back in the time, you know, like in 2010s and start 2012, that's the time first was reported in Wisconsin, 2012. It was, you know, believed that the storm from, you know, southern part of the United States, you know, that helped in moving the spotted wing Drosophila into Wisconsin. But, you know, it's been almost, 10 years now, 9 to 10 years now. So they have naturalized in Wisconsin conditions. So, and the other thing is about is that, you know, I would still keep monitoring for it using a trap. And see when they emerge. And even if it's supposed to be, you know, coming up from a storm, they get easily attracted, you know, to those traps. And then probably, you know, based on how many insects you're collecting, or even if you spot a few of them, you could actually spray. Now you have to be a bit careful too. Many of these insecticides, you know, they have a broad spectrum activities. So if you spray it in the ground, there are a lot of good beneficial insects as well too, from ground beetles and stuff. So they might also get, you know, knocked out, you know, from that as well too. So you have to be a bit careful about it, you know, on that.
Sure. All right, Philip, thank you. Lynn in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Lynn.
Hi there. Yes, I have a question about honeyberries. I have two that I planted a number of years ago. They are living, but they don't seem to produce much. I've just got a few berries. I have the two kinds that cross-pollinate each other, so that's not seeming to be the issue. But they are living, but they're not thriving and producing much. Does it take a while to establish and for them to produce?
The honeyberry is our cap. They tend to cross flower actually in early May. I mean, way before strawberries, okay, they start to bloom, they tend to produce the flowers along its stem. And so the first thing, you know, I usually pops in my head is the compatibility, the pollen compatibilities, okay? So like you said, if you feel confident that, you know, you purchase two different varieties, they are supposed to be cross-pollinated and they have a compatibility, then probably the next suspect would be is the weather conditions. Since they actually bloom probably in about in a mid-spring, sometimes if you have a sudden frost or, you know, a severe cooler temperature, that may also help in avoiding some of the flowers too. So that's one possibility that why, you know, it still keep growing, but they're not actually, you're not getting any fruit. The third thing possibility would be that if the site location is not getting enough light. So light is one of the key factors that triggers the flower bud initiation. So during the growing season, if they're not getting 6 to 8 hours of light, then you're not going to see that much of flower bud initiation as well too. So these are some common factors. The other thing I would also suggest is not to over-fertilize honeyberries. Honeyberries, they hardly need any fertilizer. They are a very tough plant, you know. Say, don't toss any too much nitrogen around the plant. If not, they'll keep producing leaves, and they may not able to produce that much of flower buds.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Lynn, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Becky in Partyville, it's your turn. Hi, Becky.
Hi, well, thanks. This is perfect timing because I want to follow up on the honeyberry question. I also have three honeyberry bushes that I'm not getting much production off of. They're in full bloom right now, and so I'm down in Columbia County, north of Madison. And I thought the blooms were supposed to be hardy, so I've never covered them. We've had a couple nights of frost since they started blooming. Do you think they're frost susceptible?
Say, I have seen it, you know, they have actually even blooms even at around the temperature about more than 35 degrees and stuff. I never encountered a serious issue with regarding to, you know, a frost injury that personally myself, but that is always a possibility. You know, if you have, you know, a temperature, you know, around in 20s, then probably, yes, that is a possibility. The other possibility is that, you know, if there is not much of, you know, we don't have a bees or anything during that time, you know, when you have such kind of cooler weather. They say in terms of, you know, cross-pollination, it's all taken by the wind. So make sure these plants are planted next to each other because they're all wind-pollinated at the time. So that's something to be also taken into consideration as well, too.
All right. Thank you, Becky, for calling. Appreciate it. Christy emails, she's 2 5x7 cedar frame vegetable gardens that are completely overgrown, and she wants to kill everything and start over. What should be the best way to kill everything and start fresh? She's tried black plastic for 6 weeks, and that didn't work real well.
It all depends on what type of vegetation or weeds you have. So if you're having a weeds or vegetation which are annuals, then probably the black plastic mulch might work. Say you, you know, you spread the black plastic mulch and, you know, make sure the edges are properly sealed and tight enough. And then, you know, leave for at least about like a 2-3 weeks. It also depends upon, you know, how the weather condition is. So in a nice sunny day, it cooks up the soil and it also helps in, you know, reducing any of the annual weeds or annual vegetation quite a bit. However, if you're dealing with perennial plants, some thistles, creeping charlies, and other plants in it, then probably your approach has to be very different. In those cases, probably, you know, your best option is to use some sort of herbicides. And many times in dealing with a perennial plant or perennial weeds, fall is one of the best times to spray for it, because in the fall, these herbicides get translocated to the roots or to the suckers and knock them out. And or you can keep on mowing them down, and that would be also possible. Smothering with any kind of cardboard boxes or any kind of other things doesn't work that really well. So, you know, so you are having a very limited option if you're dealing with some perennial weeds.
Yeah, there you go. So some sort of herbicide, and better in fall, but you could do it in the spring, I would expect.
You could also do it in the spring. In spring, what's going to do is it's going to suppress the plant. It's just going to burn the foliage, but it's not necessarily going to kill it. So, in other words, it's just going to weaken the plant. So it means that you need to do some repeated application to weaken and weaken the plant. So you could integrate both by spraying and mowing and also pulling if you can, but pulling is not a good idea because when you pull, you're not going to remove or extract the entire root system. You're going to break the root system, and it's going to keep coming back again, and that's a good chance that, you know, you're going to spread it, you know, because every tiny bit of its roots, it can generate some new daughter plants. Like a classic example is a Canadian thistle. Definitely a fall application is very important. You can do the spring integrated with some mowing. That will help in suppressing them.
Paul in Partyville, we'll go to you now. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Larry. Calling in reference to the gentleman who called about thimbleberries and asked about how to grow them. To my knowledge, I have never heard of anybody domesticating those. I spend a lot of time in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and that's one of two places that I'm told that these berries grow on their own. They grow in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and in Maine, and the larger patches are pretty well-guarded secrets because they make they're used primarily for jam. I've never heard of anybody doing anything else with them except making jam. And they, like a half pint of jam will go for probably $15, $16. It's very expensive jam. So the patches are a well-guarded secret, but I have never heard of anybody being able to domesticate that berry.
Huh, interesting. VJ, comment?
Yes, absolutely, because the thimbleberries, you know, can go about 8 feet tall easily. So trying to trellis them and train them is quite challenging. And, you know, and say that's one of the reasons why maybe in Wisconsin, not, it's not been commercially produced, you know, because it's hard to train or habitat, you know, provide a good habit conditions for them. And, you know, and plus, you know, I don't know if you happen to taste it at the move, but it's a bit seedy as well, too. But again, I haven't seen any commercial growers training them, and I haven't seen any literatures about it. So, yeah, I can understand that, you know, why it's hard to, you know, contain these berries. Yes.
Paul, thank you. Appreciate it. Kay in Madison, your turn. Hi, Kay.
Hello.
Hi, Kay. Are you there? What's on your mind?
Yes. I had a small patch of rhubarb in my little backyard. When someone, a friend came to put it to bed last fall, I found him putting a little Roundup around the area. And now my rhubarb is not coming up. But I have I have some more rhubarb in a different area that I'd like to move over to the first area. And how should I treat that soil? What should I use?
At the time when they transplanted, when you transplanted the rhubarb, did they spray around the same time or did they spray in a different time in the fall?
I think Kay is wanting to move the rhubarb from one spot to the spot where she lost the rhubarb due to the herbicide.
Okay, so if that is the case, you should be fine because Roundup, you know, gets demetabolized very quickly in the soil, so it doesn't have the residual effect. So you could actually transplant them right now. So the question I was trying to figure is that, you know, why that rhubarb failed. If that is a case that they sprayed around the same time, then probably yes. Or probably if you happen to transplant it very late in the fall, then probably that could also be possible. But absolutely yes, right now, yes, you could scoop it out of the ground and you can divide them and you can transplant it to the site that you happen to spray Roundup last fall. It shouldn't affect your new plants at this time. Yep.
There you go, Kay. Thank you so much for calling. You know, I wanted to mention, VJ, that Wisconsin Public Radio and Extension, UW Extension, are working together so we get a better understanding of what people learn by tuning into Garden Talk, our show. When Extension folks join in the conversation, folks like you. And so we've got a little evaluation, I looked at the questions. There's just four questions, and you can answer them very quickly. And they're just for us to get a better handle on what we do. Maybe we could do a better job of it. We want to measure the impact we have in the state with shows like this one. Again, a short survey should take you less than a couple of minutes. It's going to allow you to... the listener to share with us what you learned today. And, you know, I was just kind of curious about new topics and emerging issues in the state, and your input may be used to provide some upcoming episodes of Garden Talk when Extension joins in. So I hope you'll take advantage. You can go to ideas at WPR.org/Larry. I believe the information there. You can just click on it and complete that. We'd love to have you do that. Well, we'd also love to have you call. If you have a question, give us a call at 800-642-1234. You can also email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mealer with VJ Pandian for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Thank you. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mealer here with my guest, V.J. Pandian. Always great to have V.J. come by. He's the extension educator for Kenosha, Milwaukee, and Racine counties. And I may have given you a wrong address, a little bit wrong address for that survey that I was talking about. If you are willing, and we hope you are, willing and able to fill out the survey that we talked about, it'll only take you a couple minutes, just go to WPR.org/Larry. WPR.org/Larry. I want to make sure I get that right for you. And now we can move on to some more questions. Let's see. Derek in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry and DJ. I have thimbleberries growing here. I have probably 100 plants at least. I transplanted them from the UP. They're probably 5 years old. They're doing great. Not a lot of production. Rabbits and deer love them.
But thimbleberries have been working for you in the Eau Claire area, Derek. So, VJ, we've got somebody who's growing them well.
That's very good to know, actually. So, 5 years you've been growing, huh? So, how is the yield like? Are you getting a lot of yield?
Can you repeat that?
He was wondering if you're getting a lot of yield.
No, they're very sparse. They're sparse in the woods when you find them. They only grow on third-year canes, and so 100 plants, I'm lucky to get many berries at all, but they are a nice cover, and they're easy to transplant. I mean, they're literally the easiest things I've ever planted. You just stick them in the ground, nothing else.
Oh, okay.
That's awesome.
Good to know. Thank you. Thanks for the tip.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Derek. I appreciate it very much. So you can grow thimbleberries in the Eau Claire area for sure. Well, Abdul in Madison, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi. I have planted 2 nectarine trees and 2 apricot trees 3 years ago. They have not produced yet. Is there how long do I have to wait before they start fruiting?
So the first tree is an apricot tree, is that?
Yeah.
Apricots and nectarines. 2 of each.
Nectarines. Okay, gotcha. So, apricot, yes, you can plant them. They are hardy for Wisconsin. But the problem is with the apricot is that I hear a lot of complaints from many homeowners is that when they tend to bloom, that exactly coincides, unfortunately, with the spring frost. They become highly vulnerable to spring frost injury, and that aborts the pollen. So, in some years, you are lucky, and some years, you won't get it. So usually you will start to see some apricots start producing about 4th or 5th year. Now, in terms of nectarines, they are not hardy for Wisconsin, basically is. And even the peaches, only the reliance is pretty hardy most years. Nectarines, our extension state specialist recommends not to grow them because they are not very hardy in Wisconsin. So if you tend to happen to get some fruit, let me know. I would be happy to document that.
There you go, Abdul. Thank you for calling. Pat in Three Lakes, it's your turn. Hi, Pat.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got about 10 acres of old farmland, used to be a potato farm years and years ago. And it's fairly high in acidic soil. I was wondering if that would be receptive to raspberries, blackberries, or blueberries.
Blueberries?
The first thing I would say, do a soil test. Get to know exactly your soil pH. Don't get any of the soil test kit in your garden centers. Okay, they're not that very accurate. So send it to a soil testing lab and get your soil pH accurately and documented. And so generally, raspberries, blackberries, yeah, they will love actually even a slightly acidic soil, like 6.8, raspberries will love it. I mean, that doesn't mean that they can't grow in alkaline. Yes, they will grow in alkaline, but they ideally prefer. But for the blueberries one, you need to bring the pH further down to 4.5, between 4.5 to 5.5. So get to know your soil pH first, and then you can amend it. Now, if the soil pH in a turns out to be an acidic below 7, then you could actually incorporate some peat. So in the area that you're going to grow some, you know, blueberries, you can incorporate some peat and add some about like sulfur, like 2 to 3 pounds per, you know, 50 cubic feet of soil. You could incorporate that, and that will help in further acidifying your soil. So that's one of the easiest ways to grow them in blueberries. And then you can try high bush blueberry varieties. You know, some of the high bush varieties are hardy for Wisconsin, like blue crop. But as far as blackberries, your raspberries, you know, they could naturally grow in any most of the soil conditions. But you know, like I said, a slightly acidic soil is preferable for them. Yeah.
Thanks, Pat. Appreciate it. Let's go to John in Richland Center next. Hi, John.
Yeah, I've got some arborvitaes in front of my house coming out, and I'm wondering what I can plant in there. I know a few years ago my ex-wife planted some bleeding hearts under a pine tree, and it killed them immediately. And it's a lot of sun, so I don't think bleeding hearts would be good there. But what can I put in there? Are they going to be too acid to kill a lot of things, or what can I plant in there?
Say, is your arborvitae, is it still there, or you cut it down?
I'm going to cut it down, then I'll pull the stumps out.
Oh, you pulled the stumps out. Okay. See, this is one of the misconceptions many people have, is that if you have a pine tree or arborvitae tree, normally many people think that the soil is going to be acidic. It's not completely true. Only if you are living in a woodland area that is completely with pine trees for like, you know, hundreds of years, and it has over deposited with a lot of pine needles, then it'll slightly change your acidic, your soil chemistry and make it more acidic. But if you have only one pine tree, one arborvitae tree, when you pulled out the stumps and you cut it down, you know, it doesn't going to change your soil chemistry that much. So my best suggestion is actually put some organic matter into it, like compost or anything like that, spread it around, okay, that area. And then you can plant any type of sun-loving type of, you know, shrubs or sun-loving trees. You can plant them. So that you have a plenty of choices to plant. Say, if you're really looking for like a small-sized tree, you can go with the service berries. They're amazing. You can plant them. If you're looking for like a small-sized shrubs, you'll have a plenty of choices as well too. You know, you can go with the panicle hydrangeas. You know, they love sun, and they'll be looking gorgeous actually in full sun as well too.
Good points, John. Good luck. Appreciate it, Mark in Madison. Your turn. Hi, Mark.
Yes. Hi. Good morning. I'm not sure he can answer this question or not, but we've got some pear trees, and last fall when the pears came out, we just they were full of pears, and we left for about a week and a half, and my daughter was home at the time, and so we asked her to go down and pick the pears, and she said within 2 days almost all the pears were off the tree. She did not pick them, and we're wondering if there might be some animal that could have crawled up in there and ate and taken all these pears. I mean, they just stripped it clean.
Wow.
Say, there's no damage to the fruit. It's just the fruit has been plucked and it's been dropped on the ground. Is that right?
They took them off the tree and didn't harm the tree at all. There was no pears after 2 days on that tree.
And they were all on the ground, the pears?
No. They were in the tree. She was going to go pick them one day, and then they came back the next day, and they were pretty much all gone.
So
they
disappeared.
On the tree, not on the ground.
So that is really a mystery, and I wonder which kind of like a wildlife animal will be able to harvest that much of pear, you know, even if it is supposed to be a wildlife animal, you know, they don't eat that much of pear fruit. So I don't know.
There might be some human intervention there.
Yeah. I'm kind of suspicious about that too. You know, I don't think it logically it fits for the wildlife to do any damage like that.
If they're completely gone, they're not on the ground. They're just completely gone. That's got to be somebody. That's got to be human intervention as far as I'm concerned. I don't think it could be anything else but.
Yeah. But you could install a security cam and check it out for this growing season.
Yeah, I would, you know, put one of those wildlife cams out in the back and see what you can find, Mark. That is really strange. Wow. Thank you so much for calling. Vijay Pandian, our guest today, and remember, we're talking about getting a little better understanding of what people learn by tuning into Garden Talk when Extension folk join the show. We have a few questions for you to answer, and that'll help WPR and Extension get better at what we do and measure the impact we have in Wisconsin. Short survey, I think there's four questions, take you 2 minutes or less probably to fill it out. To do that, you just need to go to WPR.org/Larry, WPR.org/Larry, and fill that out. Take you a couple minutes, and it'll help us, and it'll help Extension. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today with us as we visit with Vijay Pandian, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County and also Milwaukee and Racine counties. So what gardening questions do you have? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. And Vijay, we have some callers online, so let's go to the phones. Chris and Spooner, it's your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Larry. I have a question about my wild blueberries. I don't know if this has already been answered. I have a hillside full of wild blueberries. It's wise to put out ashes from our wood stove that we heat with all winter. I've always thought that wild blueberries thrive where there's been forest fires and burns. That's what I've heard. That'd be helpful to put some ashes, spread it over the blueberry patches.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a good idea, actually, to spread in wood ashes. Wood ashes tend to increase your alkalinity level in your soil. So being up in northern Wisconsin, you have naturally an acidic soil. So tossing some wood ashes, it can actually change your soil chemistry if it's in a large quantity. So certainly in southern part of Wisconsin, we don't typically recommend to use any wood ash. Plus there are some, toxic metals, it can also be there. So it's not a good idea to toss the wood ash. Now, wood ash also do have some nutrients like potash, into it. But overall, I would say, it's not a good idea to put wood ashes around your blueberry plants or into your vegetable garden in general. So, yeah, it's not.
All right, Chris, thank you. Norman in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Norman.
Well, I got to thank your guests for helping me out in the past with an apple problem, so I'm going to tell you the solution to what happened to those pears, because we've got a number of pear trees by our house and a little ways away in the woods, and this year and last year I witnessed the gray squirrels going up and taking those pears off and going off in the woods with them, probably because there wasn't a very good nut crop this year. And they also take apples, but they prefer pears. And I also saw red squirrels doing it. They would clip them off, take them in their mouth, run down the tree, and scurry off into the woods.
Unbelievable. Wow. Wish I had some more wood squirrels in Kenosha County, because we had a lot of pears last fall at the Kenosha County Center in Bristol, and they fall dropping into the ground. But I never thought about it that the schools will do that. So it's good. Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah.
You know, Ed in the UP said that squirrels, he saw squirrels strip an apple tree of apples in about 2 hours. So those squirrels.
Wow.
And here's another one. Larry in Green Bay saw turkeys knock down plums in his tree, fell to the ground, and then they ate them. They ate them all up. So
wow. Okay. It's
so not necessarily just a human out there. It could be squirrels. It could be turkeys. You never know, I guess. Oh, man. Norman, thank you for that. You can join in, too, by the way, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. Aaron in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Aaron.
Hi there. I have some raspberry bushes in my backyard, and I know over the years they've slowly been encroaching more on the lawn. I was just curious if there was a way to, I don't know, keep them more corralled to where they were versus just letting them continue to spread out.
Is that your summer bearing or a fall bearing raspberry, Aaron?
I'm thinking both.
Okay. Generally, you know, when you do your pruning, either your summer or fall bearing at the time, you tend to actually thin some of those suckering canes off. You know, you take a shovel, you actually, you know, cut them down to the ground and you sever any of those suckers, okay? In that way, you tend to contain them. And you normally, you know, leave only about like a 3 to 4 sturdy canes per square foot or per foot of a row. That's pretty much the general thumb rule. So when you do prune your fall-bearing raspberries, when you mow them down to the ground, take a shovel and anything that suckers, okay, about like a, you know, 2 feet or 3 feet away from the, you know, the crown of the plant, you just, you know, sear them up and you scoop it out. In that way, you've been able to contain it. Now, some people have tried using some sort of like a, you know, a landscape edging materials and stuff. That doesn't work because these plants can tend to sucker further underneath the ground and then they can come back. So do some good pruning, you know, thin them out. Yeah.
Thank you again for calling, Aaron. Appreciate it. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Carolyn emailed to say that she has a very mature lemon tree, which produces lemons, and a 3-year-old lime tree. The lime tree has its first blossoms. Does she have to separate them so they don't cross-pollinate? Mm. The answer to that, I think, is no. But I don't know.
Yeah,
what
they
do you
don't
think?
Typically. No, they don't actually cross-pollinate that much. You know, they're mostly self-pollinating over our plants. So you don't have to worry about it. I mean, it's good that, you know, they're blooming. That's a very good sign, and you should enjoy that. And, you know, I wouldn't worry about it, yeah, about cross-pollination.
And Phil in Green Bay, we'll go to you. Hi, Phil.
Hello. The question that I have today is I have 3 limelight hydrangea bushes that over the years, about 8 or 9 years, you know, I've cut off above the second knot module, and they've become quite large. How far back can I cut those?
So when you start thinking about, you know, trimming any type of panicle hydrangeas, you know, you generally actually go with a dead headache. So you cut those, you know, dead flower stalk, you know, just close to a you know, a lateral bud. Sometimes people let them keep, you know, those dead flowers for winter interest as well, too. And in the spring, naturally, they will, you know, wither off. But if you're really looking for about, you know, reducing the height of the bush or the, you know, the size of the bush, then you could actually, you know, do some, you know, thinning cut or as well as some, you know, renewal pruning as well, too. In a thinning cut, you know, if the bush is about 6 feet high, and then probably you could select some of those canes or the some of the branches, and then you could scale them down, you know, about like, you know, 1/3. so you can take one third out of it. And in that way, you could be able to reduce the height of it. But I would not do any kind of like a cookie cut to reduce the height of it, but I would do some selective thinning cut in, you know, on those bushes.
All right. Phil, thank you very much for calling. Lily emailed, and she was emailing to comment on Sue's question. I think it was Sue from earlier. Sue was wondering where she can pick organic berries. And Lily says in Bayfield, Blue Vista Farms in Bayfield offers organic berries for picking and is an incredibly beautiful place. There are also many other farms and orchards in the area to visit. I always enjoy the Bayfield area myself. And so Blue Vista Farms in Bayfield area is a place to go for organic berries. So there you go.
In fact, my first position was up in Ashland, Bayfield County, and they have a lot of quite a bit, you know, blueberry growers out there, and Blue Vista Farm is also one of them. And down the road, they also have another blueberry grower. Actually, he's also big into blueberry, specializes in blueberry production. I forgot his name, but the whole area, it's in a bit of a hilly area, and it's a very scenic place. And I'm sure Larry, you did many in a talk show that, you know, and it's a beautiful place to visit, and they have a lot of fruits and a lot of berries, diversity of crops over there.
Yeah, and we're getting closer to the Bayfield in bloom, or maybe already into Bayfield in bloom, the season for it. And I always enjoy an early May trip to Bayfield, or have until COVID struck. It's always a wonderful place to visit. Frankly, no matter the time of the year, I've been there all different times of the year, and it's always a great place to visit. Well, you know, I want to talk about a berry that you mentioned right in the beginning of the show, and we never got back to it, and that's the Aronia berry. Is that becoming more common here in the state?
So the Aronias, we do have an ornamental plant, and the thing about Aronias, or the chokeberry, the black chokeberry, is that, you know, it is rich in antioxidants. And it's one of the very few foods which are high in antioxidant, and that's one of the reasons why many people like to grow that. Now, the thing about Aronia berries is that, you know, you can't directly eat the fruit. You will spit it out right away. So it has to be actually processed, you know, either the jams or juices and stuff like that. But it's fairly easy to grow. It can adapt to any type of soil condition. It prefers full sun, but you can also grow them in pot shade as well, too. It has a gorgeous fall coloration. It's also, you know, helpful for pollinators as well, too. So it's one of the few plants that can be easily adaptable and grow in Wisconsin, you know. But, you know, the fruit, you know, there are certain varieties which are very, you know, produces enormous amount of fruit compared to the ornamental plant. And so you could try those things. Like I said, you know, it's a very rich in antioxidant. I love it. You know, so we are planning on doing an antioxidant-rich food study in Kenosha County in Bristol. And we are exploring some of those, you know, berry crops which the homeowners can grow in a small space setting. So I certainly am kind of putting Aronias also in my list, actually, of berries to be tested. So I'll let you know more about it. And our extension food specialist, Dr. Brian Smith, also tested quite a bit. So there are a lot of new varieties available for homeowners to try grow Aronias. They are very hardy for this cancer.
That and what, you know, once they're made into a jam, what does the berry taste like? Is it reminiscent of whatever other berries?
I mean, you know, once it mixes up in the jams with the sugar and stuff, you know, it kind of gives you like the sweetness of a little bit sweetness and a toddy taste of like a currant and the black currant. And yep. That's the thing. But in terms of, I would not eat it raw. So some of the varieties I think I would suggest that you may want to try is Viking. It gets about like 3 to 8 feet tall. But if you're looking more of a short varieties, which might be good, is Nero, N-E-R-O. Nero is a one of the elder ones. And then we have Auto Magic, which is more compact type as well, too. So now I think there are some furthermore new compact varieties available. I think from Chicagoland Growers has also released a one called Morton, which gets only about 2 to 3 feet. So you could actually, thinking about edible landscape, you can use Aronia, some of the varieties. It's part of your edible landscape, and you can harvest those berries in late summer, and then you can process them. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Pete in Milwaukee, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Pete.
Hi. I planted a dwarf Queen Anne cherry tree right next to my tart cherry tree, maybe 10 feet away. And this Queen Anne has grown to over 25 feet, and it's getting too big for my backyard. I live near Marquette University. Is there anything I can do about that?
Certainly think about pruning. I mean, it won't be like a normal pruning. I'm kind of assuming you may not have pruned it for a while. So I would, depending upon how big the tree is, one, I would call a certified arborist to train to prune them correctly. Or if you know any fruit growers, you can also hire them to see if they can help you in pruning it correctly, those trees. So it will, you can't prune, unpruned trees right away. If you neglect it for a few years and all of a sudden you want to prune it back to bring them back in shape. No, you can't. So you have to spread the pruning over about 3 to 5 years. In that way, you could be able to sustain and maintain both those cherry trees. Absolutely, for cherry trees, they do need light. And because, as I said in the before, light is a key factor that triggers the flower bud initiation. So if the one tree is shading up, the other tend to prune some of the branches. And so if your branches, if you want to do the pruning by yourself, one other thing is that we do have an extension publication, that talks about, pruning trees. One is for ornamental trees. Another one, we have an extension publication on, growing cherry trees, apricots, and peaches. And in that publication, that is a beautiful technique of how to prune the cherry trees. So you can download that publication for free online.
And you go to the UW Learning Store.
Yeah.
And you can get those publications.
Yeah. learningstore.extension.wisc.edu. So that is like a portal of a lot of the extension publication. So the publication number that you want to look for is A3639, A for Apple, 3639. That publication has growing apricots, cherries, peaches, and plums in Wisconsin. And in the middle of the pages, you will start to see some of those pruning techniques that has been recommended by our former extension specialist, Dr. Terry Roper.
All right. Pete, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Another listener emailed that another blueberry farm in Bayfield area is the Highland Valley Farm. That might have been the one you were thinking of.
Yeah.
Highland Valley Farm in the Bayfield area. So, yeah, another good place to go to pick your berries. If you want to, going back to how we kind of started the show, BJ, if you're thinking, all right, I've got a spot here, I've got some, a place where I could put some berries in, but someone who doesn't have a lot of garden experience, let's say, what berry would you suggest to begin with?
So the easiest one I would say is to begin with strawberries. It's more easy. Strawberries are self-pollinating. And so there are three different kinds of strawberries. And there's a summer bearing, ever-bearing, and then, you have the fall-bearing as well, too. So the day-neutral bearing, sorry. So you can try any of these type of strawberries. Summer bearings, you need to have, 3 years in the ground. But, you know, if you don't have that time of time and energy to maintain for 3 years, then you can actually go to day-neutral berries, you know, and the day-neutrals that every two years you need to replace it. Or you can go with, you know, ever-bearing varieties as well, too, you know, which you can replant it every year. So you have strawberries, one of the easiest berries to grow. You can grow them in containers. You can grow them in raised beds. You can also grow them in soil. The key thing is that they need light. So light is one of the major factors right up there. And then you need to fertilize it and then water as needed. You know, you don't want them to stress out. So strawberries is one of the easiest ones to grow, I would say, for a beginner. The next easiest one, I would say, is to try grow some honeyberries. Honeyberries is a very low maintenance. You know, it blooms early in the, you know, early to mid-spring. And it doesn't need that much of maintenance. I haven't seen that much of pest or diseases affecting it. So you could tuck it in one corner of it as long as there's a full sun. It's fit to grow. You don't have to water that much. It's a very hardy plant. You know, you can't mess around with it. You can't go wrong with that. Then aronia is also a beautiful one. It's also a very low maintenance type of crop. But except for, you know, if you're looking for a taste perspective, then probably, yeah, it may not be the best one, I would say.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, they're all good in my mind. And it's always fun to talk with you about them. I do want to mention once more before we get to the end of the show that we have this survey that Public Radio and UW-Madison's Division of Extension are working together just to get a better understanding of what people learn by tuning into Garden Talk when we have Extension folks on the show. They're used to help us and Extension get better at what we do and measure the impact we have in Wisconsin. It's a short survey. I think it's four questions. Take you less than a couple of minutes. And it will allow you to share with us what you learned today. And we're curious about new topics. We're also curious about emerging issues in the state. And your input may be used in upcoming episodes of Garden Talk.
Yeah.
When Extension joins in. That's the important thing, isn't it, BJ? Oh,
absolutely,
man. Yeah.
We do have some upcoming new sessions coming up. You know, we do have some upcoming new topics coming up. It's free. One is the jumping worms. We are going to talk about it. It's online at the Extension. It's on April 21st, and that event is going to be hosted by the Extension, and you can sign up online at horticulture.extension.vis.edu, that website. So we have upcoming new webinars on jumping worms and vegetable diseases also, too.
And for this survey today, just go to WPR.org/Larry. And then the easiest thing, click on today's show note. If you do that, you'll get a link to the survey there. So WPR.org/Larry. Then click on today's show note for a link to the survey. Always great to have VJ Pandya. And he'll be back again, I'm sure, and we'll talk with him. Always fun to have him with us for Garden Talk. Next week on Garden Talk, Kevin Esperito comes back to talk about growing, gardening in fabric-grown bags. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mealer.